Welcome to the Heart of Healthcare podcast. In series three, we'll be talking about healthcare from a global perspective, offering deep discussions about what it will take for a system shift that will benefit patients and healthcare professionals when medicine is practiced from the heart. We'll be hearing from Stephanie Mo Davis, Drs. Ruby Shah, Dan Dinnenberg, and Diane Bonhoeffer as they share insights and wisdom from their personal experiences. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
Hello, everybody. We're meeting today again with our wonderful guests, Dan and Stephanie and Ruby, to further explore the dynamics between patients and healthcare professionals and looking at this also from a system perspective. And in today's episode, we want to focus on seeing the human before the disease. So welcome, Dan and Steffi and Ruby.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back. Last time we talked about sovereignty, and we said we talk about sovereignty. Our understanding of sovereignty was not one of power, but one of vulnerability and humbleness, one that is based in self-awareness and is based in authentic agency, where we're meeting eye to eye with the patient, very often not knowing. And so that's a perfect starting point to for the conversation of how can we see the human before the disease. And I guess one of the points that really struck me this week is that we have, it might be a symbolic story, in our home we have accommodated friends from Ukraine, so two mothers and three children. And she, one of the mothers has reported that a few years ago, she was living in Ukraine and taking care of people from Chechnya who had experienced shelling and had experienced war and were traumatized. And she felt way back then that she could well understand what was going on. And she was very compassionate and understanding and supportive. And she has now arrived in Switzerland, fleeing from Ukraine, and said, having experienced what it is like to actually be in a city that is being bombed and hearing the sounds that I heard and feeling the fear that I felt, I now know that I had absolutely no idea what the friends from Chechnya was going through way back then. And to me, this is very a very telling story, because in many ways it tells us, it's an analogy to healthcare, where as healthcare professionals, we may be very empathetic, we may be very compassionate, and we may have a lot of knowledge about a condition or a disease, but we actually don't know what it's like to have it and to live with it, to live in it. And so I would love to have that conversation here about what is the difference between, if you like, seeing the disease before the patient or seeing the patient before the disease along these lines. And Dan, I'm sure you have a lot of things you would like to share in this direction. So why don't you get started?
Thank you, Jan. When you're speaking, I got goosebumps. I can start to empathize and feel what that would be like. And you start to imagine, but I think you nailed it. I think you have no idea until that direct experience. But what I think about when we talk about this subject, I think about the many different people that I've taken care of that would have the same disease state. But each and every one of them are just absolutely so different in what was important about their healing. And that ended up driving how to get them there. And so if you think about when a person has a meaning and purpose of what it means to overcome a disease state, that's when I have found a portal into connection and a portal into being and a portal into treatment. And I think that has become my role in sort of creating that humility in that space and entering into the relationship with my expertise, but allowing facilitation, allowing someone else to really understand where their healing needs to go. And so just to give a little bit more practical approach, you could have one person with whatever disease state that is. Let's say we're just even talking about diabetes and we're talking about numbers. We're talking about hemoglobin A1C and fasting glucose, but it matters what they're looking for. The prevention of micro and macrovascular complications might mean much less than someone being like, look, I want to be able to walk my daughter down the aisle at her wedding, or I want to be able to cycle, or I want to be able to just be able to not lose a limb and go down life in the same way. And when you touch on that, now you're opening up into what you just spoke about is sovereignty. But I want to just leave it there, because what you're talking about is the ability to really understand. And so for me, it's like, before we get too into this, I feel like Stephanie and the patient perspective of what it feels like. So I'll push it back to you, Jan, but I'm like, that is the person that has been through the bombing, the shelling. And as your example is so incredible, is like someone that's actually lived through that and now can understand what we're talking about.
Stephanie, go ahead.
Thank you, everybody. And Jan's amazing to hear you tell that story. And just all of the times, if we're going to put it through our own vessel of understanding, of all of the times that maybe we have imagined someone else's pain, and really having clear sight to see our imagination may be off, and it may be deeply off. And I think it's one of those important factors when talking about sovereignty. These are big concepts. If we're going to implement these terms such as sovereignty and a new way to incorporate our relationship and potential in medicine, is to first, again, understand that I don't have the direct experience, which we understand, but to fully also accept that no matter how many times, as Dan was saying, you've seen that same condition or a similar outcome, you have to go into that room with fresh eyes with every patient, because there's so much more on the table about this person's experience. And if we're coming in with an ounce of judgment, we may actually be harming that patient in a different way, maybe within the faculty of the heart or confidence or trust or faith or some of the more unseen elements that go along with trying to navigate an illness. So from my perspective as a patient, I want to come to the table with my full experience and not feel judged and not feel like my healthcare provider who has the expertise to help me doesn't have the time or understanding for me to bring my true subjective experience to the table. So if I'm going to come to the table to give you everything, I want to make sure that I'm speaking to somebody with whom I feel safe, not just physically, but spiritually and emotionally as well too. So it's definitely calling forth something within the provider that if this is really what we're seeking, potentiating illness and going through this process of life and death with a broader understanding of we can still be content even when we're dying, we have to be able to show up as a clean slate. Even though we're looking on paper at a problem list, we have to remember that there's other superior faculties that go along with the body, which is the heart, the mind, the psyche, how we're navigating our feeling state, our emotions. And I really fully believe that in my experience, if I wasn't fully willing to address and look within and all of my faculties, I definitely would not have had the leverage or maybe the experience of coming through this the way that I did. So as the patient, I know it sounds odd, but the physical aspect of it was almost the smallest aspect of my recovery and my healing. I'm trusting the doctors to do their job, but also just to know that there's so much more going on, and to just show up without that judgment is incredibly a powerful and an opportunity to potentiate that individual's process.
Thank you. And if I hear you correctly, actually, it's not only that the physical part is only one fraction of what's really going on, what is your subjective experience, but if the physician is exclusively focusing on the physical manifestation, then they might actually be misguided. They might actually not deliver the best healthcare possible, even if there's a multidisciplinary team where, let's say, the psychologist or psychiatrist looks at one part and the somatic healthcare professional, kind of your good old internal medicine doctor or your pediatrician or your specialist, focusing on one organ even possibly, that the collaboration with them as a team may be helpful. But if there isn't somebody really addressing you as a person before we go down to the organ level or before we limit you to the physical level, we're actually not treating the condition, but just one tiny little branch of it. Is that correct?
That is very correct. And when somebody's trying to tell their story of their illness and they have to continuously fragment it into different specialties, it's hard to get the story out because the relationship dynamic with those individuals is also different. So where we're at now, one thing I can just suggest or for us to think about is really truly the cohesiveness and level of respect and care for the colleagues amongst the team. So they can be a little more acute and precise and actually feeling the entirety of the patient.
So Ruby, let me ask you, you have enough kilometers on the road and years in as a healthcare professional. So you have a lot of routine, right? And that's a really interesting area to look at. In routine, we know what we're doing, right? That's kind of, 2 a.m. in the morning on a night shift, kind of almost spinal cord level, we know what to do in what sort of situations. And what is the difference for you between seeing the disease, so you know what to do for a certain condition, before the patient, or seeing the patient before the disease, particularly when you look at routine situations?
Great. Thank you, Jan. Perfect question, because this is what I was reflecting on as I was listening to both Dan and Stephanie talk about, is I was thinking back over when I have done this naturally, made connections with patients, regardless, completely disconnected from how long I've known them, because you would think that if you establish a relationship that's long-term with a patient, such as in a primary care or outpatient setting, it would be easier to start to get to know them better, see all the different aspects of their lives. But I was just thinking that actually I've experienced this being knocked out of my routine, literally in an emergency situation where I had a patient, without sharing too many personal details, who was a young woman, very, very sick from cancer, dying. And I didn't really get to know her or her family longer than, I would say, a week, no more than that. And this was all in the inpatient setting. And I never really did get to see them in clinic or anything like that. It was really in and out of these emergency situations. And this was one of those seminal moments in my life, in my career, where watching them deal with so much heartache, so much difficulty, in a year where I had seen a lot of families go through loss, grief together, I remember standing there and having this absolute gut-wrenching, visceral feeling that just this realization came home into every cell in my body that there was absolutely nothing I could do to make this awful situation better. Absolutely nothing. And no matter how many times I'd seen other families deal with, cancer and death in far too young and far too early, which of course are just judgments on my part, because who are we to decide when it's time for any of those things? But I remember watching this particular family and realizing finally, and really for the first time, realizing that I guess what I'm trying to say is I actually gained a sense of freedom in that moment, because I realized that there was absolutely no way I could ever know what they were going through. And there was absolutely nothing I could do to make their really, really horrific, probably the worst day in their lives, any better. And then I realized that, well, all I could really focus then on was trying not to make it worse. And that was my moment, my flip. I mean, absolute flip. I'm telling you, from that moment on, I've looked at those situations completely differently and I moved through them very differently. It's almost with a sense of flow and fitting into place, because I can see within that family and within that dynamic where I need to be. And it's quite often not as important as it looks on TV or how I may have experienced it as a younger physician. And now that my practice has been really mainly outpatient for many years, and although I do inpatient work with residents, I've taken that lesson. I've been able to share it with my residents, but I've found it a useful story that I can tell other patients. But again, the biggest lesson is in that flip, to flip into where is my small part that I can play in this one moment? And it just puts the larger story in perspective. And so going back to your question about routine is, once I changed my broader perspective of what I was there to do from the get-go, that I wasn't necessarily there to do anything major, I wasn't a big part of their story, then that actually completely took me out, put me in a completely different routine. And this is what I was thinking as I was listening to the others sharing their insights, is that this is what we can do on aggregate, is if we really can bring in this broader view of relating with patients and this, to me, patient-physician relationship or team of the future, really a team of the future, the healthcare team where the patient is a member of the team, an equal member participating. That to me seems just like the starting point. I mean, it shouldn't just be our dream and our goal. It should just be the starting point. And the system changes as a result. It has to. I know I say that a lot. I feel like I've been saying that a lot, but it's because that's what excites me, is to explore and think about the ways in which we could do this differently by bringing that patient into the dialogue to bring their story in a completely different way.
Thank you. That is really helpful. So well, you were touching on many things. I guess one of your core messages is that a state of vulnerability and a state of not knowing is actually liberating.
Yes.
And that you get to you arrive at the primum non nocere, at first do no harm, from a very humble perspective. And that's actually an enormous achievement, if you can actually not do harm. And if you come from this point, it sounds very differently than, you know, if it has the connotation of a lawyer breathing down your neck, you know, like, first do you no harm, comma, otherwise thou shall be sued, you know. Then actually now it's similar to sovereignty, right? It's not about I know it all and I'm the authority here, but actually a humbleness and a willingness to learn from the expert in the room, that is the patient. And here you're recognizing that not doing harm is actually not such a simple thing to do. So the second thing that I hear from you is that seeing the patient before the disease is actually what is interesting. And I think we've all touched on that. So particularly in routine situations for me, I'm not interested anymore. You know, after 20 years of going through medical routines, you know, I know the drill, right? Of how to go down the algorithms. I'm deeply bored by the algorithms, right? And by what can be done. What I'm really interested in is who is the one that has this issue, and whether the algorithm is required or not is the second question. But the interesting and living, inspiring, motivating, what keeps me alive, what keeps me going back to work, is not to run down the same algorithm yet again and not knowing who the person is, but actually living with the person and experience, going through these experiences and being honored and blessed to share a stretch of life together. That is rewarding, that is deeply inspiring, and then it gives meaning to my activities. So I was wondering, Stephanie, you mentioned the problem list and the focus on the problem list. And we had it in other disguises in previous conversations, the diagnosis list. What a tremendous difference of focus, you know, looking at seeing the human before the disease. What's happening right now is that, you know, the patient in room ABC or the patient with the 9 o'clock appointment has a problem list and has a list of diagnoses. So our focus is on the disease very clearly, structurally, systematically so. And I have never seen a potential list. I have never seen a resource list, right? And sometimes the social workers would add this, and sometimes the psychologists would add this, but it's clearly not part of, there is an ICD, you know, there's an international coding of diseases and conditions. There isn't an international coding of potentials and of resources and of wellness factors, and that doesn't exist. And the reimbursement system isn't built on any of those for sure. So what does this do to you as a patient when you're dealt with as a problem list?
Well, I can tell you exactly what happens in my case was that I was learning that in order to show up in healthcare, I had to drop aspects of myself, because that was what was being reflected to me, was always talking about the problem list. So I would show up knowing that I was leaving aspects of myself behind. And we talked about this in agency and sovereignty. But when you're just focusing on the problems, actually the elements that we're ignoring that maybe want to come through as far as the mental health or the emotional well-being or some of the struggles that are going on at home in accordance with the family actually become amplified, because we're not addressing those other faculties. We start to lose that capability to navigate because there's so much of an over-focus than on the physical. So I may already have fear within myself or concerns about my life or death experience with this illness, or deep-seated fears that are coming through. And when it all starts to revolve around the physical and the problems and not the potential, well, then I, as a patient who does maybe has not yet embodied the empowerment or potential of a patient, over-focuses on the problems. And then everything around my life that could and should be getting better through that introspective process of potential is getting further dampened and suppressed, because now there's a hyper-focus on just the physical problems.
Yeah. And so how are you guided towards your agency? How are you guided towards your sovereignty as a patient? How are you guided towards your potential, towards your responsibility as a patient?
Yes. So to speak from that state of mind in my past was, I'm not guided. I'm lost. Mm-hmm. I'm lost. I'm lost in the woods. I'm over-focused on this physical problem when, you know, this is the numbers. I'm focused on the problem list. And I'm lost at first. And again, a lot of people, you may or may not have people to support you along this process. It's dependent on the level and quality of people that are in your immediate environment as well. So this sort of how do we provide a potential list needs to come through the vessel of somebody who's experienced it and transcended it. So this is the thing, is that we may look at in the professional field of healthcare as potential as being your cancer is gone, or you have that organ, go out and get them now, kid, and do your thing. We don't understand the full range of potential for maybe even a human being, especially even a human being who's going through a complete breakdown of the physical experience. So and I know many other patients, this is why there's so much of a communion between patients, is because we're the ones helping guiding each other, but ultimately that guidance also has to be done within the self too. And as patients, we're not expecting doctors to do it all, know it all, and be the psychologist and the emotional support system and the biologist and the physical specialist. We're not expecting that. But what we are needing and desiring is to approach us differently from the start. So I would like to just suggest something, is we're talking about subjective experience, and the greatest potential comes from really fully opening to your direct experience and feeling it and addressing the things that arise within that multitude of your physical experience or your direct experience. The practitioner, I believe, if they could find a way to trust their knowledge and wisdom to the degree that they're not going to lose anything. If they show up honoring a completely new direct experience with each patient, I think that could provide just that space holder and that containment that the patient might need to be able to optimize and not focus so much on the problem list. So if a doctor were to say to me, Stephanie, this is quite an experience. You know, how are you experiencing your illness? Like, tell me, how are you experiencing this? Because one of the things that I find is the biggest blocks to potential is when we merge the disease with the patient state. And then as the practitioner, we see them as the disease. There's no space. There's no aliveness for transformation or transmutation to a more powerful degree if we're limiting this experience by us being it. You being the doctor, I'm the patient, I have cancer. These sorts of terms are very limiting. So I would just love to see a doctor say, how are you experiencing this? And then for the doctor to admit, I'm experiencing this illness with this patient differently myself, and I'm actually evolving and learning as well, and we're doing this together.
So important. Thank you. Dan, how are you actually doing this?
I feel like when Stephanie was just saying, something came so clear, a patient encounter that was very early in my career, and I was in residency, and that idea of that direct experience really comes through. I had a female patient that was dealing with anxiety, OCD, and what would be called like a chronic skin picking condition, dermatillomania. But it's interesting. It's not something that I had experienced and transcended, even from the knowledge of how to deal with it. But I was so young in my training, and I showed up, as Stephanie said, she was lost. She was in a spiral of increased anxiety, and then she was just picking her skin, and it was getting more and more deforming and more intense, and that would bring her into more anxiety. And I didn't know what to do. I was lost myself, and I just showed up as a human being and empathized and felt and talked. And through our work together, we came up with a plan of every time she had this urge, and typically the picking would help the urge get better. It actually was a way of relieving that. We created, she had so much to say about this that I said, hey, what if you wrote about this? What if you wrote poems every time you had the urge and took that emotion and pushed it or allowed it into the world in a different way? And it's residency, so you have these patients, but they're not clients for life. You have them maybe for a year or two, and then you don't know. I received from an old attending at that UCSF Santa Rosa residency a book that was left at the residency with a foreword, an acknowledgement that had my name on there. And it was an anthology of poetry. And it was just unbelievable to get an anthology of poetry with my name. Hey, this is for my Dr. Dan, the resident physician who inspired me. And I was just absolutely blown away because I didn't know what happened. And here this person had just the trajectory of their life. And they took all of this energy and put it into something so profound. And for me, early in my career, I was lost as well. I had no idea what to do with this person. And this is probably one of the best patient outcomes that I could address and kind of talk about. So it is that vulnerability. It is that not knowing. And I think one thing that Stephanie said is like, look, the other patients that have experienced and transcended, that is incredible. That's why everyone's looking online at other experiences, at chats and blogs, and trying to kind of find that out when they are lost in that spiral. And what happens in medicine is I think we've had that wounded healer motif where some of us have gone through the depths of working through illness. And that has bring us into the empathy. Jan, coming back into the spiral, the regenerative of taking somebody in that's been through that, and then they've seen that themselves. But are we capable, if we don't bring, again, as Stephanie said, that ounce of judgment, and we can navigate illness and allow the experience, Jan, as you were talking about, as being creative and new and inspiring, and you don't bring that in, could those direct experiences that we're flowing through give us those innate capabilities without having to struggle ourselves, without having to be wounded in that deepest way, but just alive with one another? And I think just one more point for me is that opens up into our innate capabilities. Perhaps that idea that early on I knew and something in me could emotionally understand that this was a poet that had something to say. And if we are allowing the algorithm to go away and our own capabilities, our senses, and our ability to connect, then what is possible? And it brings us, right? It brings us. We're going from sovereignty into systems. And so now we're creating systems. And how would we do it? And what we hear about, we need time, we need experience, we need to take away our own judgment, we need to be supported to navigate. And now we get to talk about that. We need to know what's going on. So that's exciting. And thank you guys so much, because I have not thought about that patient in so long, and it just became so clear. Actually, Ruby, as you were sharing your experience.
Amazing. So we have actually, we've established a lot of things here when thinking about seeing the human before the disease. We've established that seeing the disease before the human implies for the patient to feel constrained, to feel limited, to feel at a loss, a result of problem lists and diagnoses, to be, feel like victimized almost, dependent, powerless, disempowered. And for the physician, it means for a couple of years, it's kind of difficult to get your head around it as a resident, to get all the algorithms and the routines established. But as soon as that's done, it actually becomes frustrating and boring. And we are really not living our initial calling. We're actually missing the point of being a healthcare professional with all the consequences of it. And we've established that when we approach a patient from this perspective, then we're kind of projecting our knowledge onto somebody who really knows and who's really the expert in the room. So when we see the human before the disease, we allow the expert in the room to be the expert in the room, and we take a humble position as a consultant and advisor, regardless of how many years of experience we have, or possibly the more experience we have, the more likely we are to become more humble. And we've also established that seeing the human before the disease actually allows to put our knowledge aside for a little bit. And it means that we may open up, just as Dan described, you know, in situations where we have to, where we're lacking the knowledge. That's when the knowledge doesn't interfere with the process of listening and with the process of activating innate capabilities that we have, including intuitive aspects of the work that are trained, structurally trained out of us. And they may actually become very helpful. They may actually be what is healing. This is actually the level where we may connect with the patient and resonate with the patient, where both patient and physician are allowed to be individual sovereign beings and meeting in that shared sovereignty. That's a lot of very powerful points that we have crystallized in this episode here. And for today, we already need to close our conversation and move next time towards system shift and cease recognizing all of these points. If we take them as a working hypothesis, if all of this was true, how then would our system need to change? What shift in the system is needed so that we get to actually integrate all of these learnings? What would the life look different? How would medicine be different if we were accepting these insights and would learn from them and behave differently tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. That's going to be really exciting to have as the next conversation. So thanks a lot for joining today. And I'm excited for our next round.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a beautiful conversation. And Jan, thank you for your articulate conclusion of our words. It's so great to hear you say that. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this Heart of Healthcare podcast brought to you by Heart-Based Medicine. If you enjoyed the conversation, you'll find some free resources and more information at heartbasedmedicine.org. Please share this episode if you feel inclined and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks and take care.